money in markets. Clearly, the global economy is going to slow down. We're seeing signs of deflation pop out everywhere. The squeeze on households throughout the globe is significant, including in the U.S. That's no surprise. We've been talking about this for years here at the Solari Report, and surely you can feel the slow burn in your own lives. A big story in the Wall Street Journal this week about healthcare, food, and basic necessities squeezing the middle class. One of the most interesting items, though, in that was significant increases in the cost of cell and home internet for Americans. The ugliness is serious. If you look at what the taxpayer has paid for these two services, frankly, I believe they should be free, and there's no reason why they shouldn't be in a healthy economy. Or nearly free. The Wall Street Journal reports home internet is up 87% since 2007. Imagine that. You're seeing just serious blowback as a result of numerous sort of top-down control policies and the global slowdown that's creating what I call blowback congestion throughout governments. We're seeing the Swedish government failed in its reconfiguring, ditto the Israeli government. You know, if you had the same process of sort of calling for a reorganization as you do in Sweden and Israel, that would have happened in the U.S. with Chuck Hagel stepping down. It reminds me of the president of Luxembourg's great quote that we often use: "We know what to do, we just don't know how to get elected after we do it." And so many of the politicians in these positions are caught between all sorts of double binds, both the, you know, Mr. Global on one side and the people on the other, but also trying to bring balance to the global economy, because the Western consumer has had quite a ride, and trying to bring them down to something that's balanced globally is a very painful process. You know, if you listen to Sir James Goldsmith, he told you why starting that process was madness, but now that the process has begun and it's underway, you know, the politics of it are very painful. It appears the president is going to replace Hagel with Ashton Carter, which is a very interesting choice. If you look at Carter, he reminds you a little bit of Merkel in the sense that he's a physicist, brilliant sort of intellectual academic career, and he's essentially what I would call a high-tech Mandarin. He's somebody who's come up the nuts and bolts of the national security state, lots of experience, both at the Department of Defense, with the think tanks, with the contractors. And this is a guy who is clearly very intelligent and has the scientific and engineering background to deal with enormous complexity professionally. So he can deal with the nuts and bolts of the defense establishment in a way that someone like Hagel wouldn't have the background to do. But I think people like Carter and Merkel, you're going to see a lot more where you're calling for people with very extraordinary intellectual capability and scientific and engineering background who can handle the complexity of what they're dealing with and will build these careers that really turn them into what I call high-tech Mandarins. Well, there's a huge push on for online sales. Every turn, you see more and more effort to get people not into the stores, but to do their shopping online. And so the push over the Black Friday weekend and what's called Cyber Monday was very strong. Sales, online sales up, but not as much as they were last year, but still respectable given what's going on in the economy. But you take a look at it and you think, what in the world is going on? Because remember, this is going to be very bad for small business. And it's also going to be tough for labor, because you're talking about instead squeezing or lowering the cost of delivering goods and services to consumers in a way that squeezes labors enormously. If you listen to the interview we did with Steve Roche on the rebalancing of the relationship between China and Asia and the United States, you know the squeeze has a very long way to go. It's something we'll talk about more in the wrap-up. One of the stories I posted this week is Amazon announced it's bought another 15,000 robots for its warehouses, and it's going to hire 80,000 temp workers at Christmas. What that means is the robots get the full-time job and the 80,000 humans. The humans get the part-time jobs, and so robots don't need health care. And so Obamacare, thank you very much for that. Some of this, again, has helped the consumer with lower gas prices, so the drop in oil, but announcements this week and last week about easing of mortgage lendings. I think if you look at the number of people who are underwater on the mortgage, they're dropping. They're down from 25% to, I think, about under 10% now. So things are improving that way. There is reports from all over the country on shortage of skilled laborers, but there is an excess of unskilled labor. So as we see the changes in the economy, we really do have a shortage of skilled workers in many areas. But we have an extraordinary number of people who don't have the skills for those jobs. So there's a real mismatch in the labor force. And you wonder how it could have happened. And certainly, we're spending a fortune on education. There was no reason for it to happen. The shrieker meter is working overtime yet again. Bloomberg and Wall Street Journal, top of the paper all week long, has been riots and protests, whether in Ferguson or in New York. But the clear message is, don't worry about the Hispanics. Black people are much worse. I'm reminded of the Deputy Assistant Secretary in the Clinton administration who said, oh, well, black people are hopeless. We're going to move them out and bring in Hispanics. But there's no doubt that, I believe the only people rioting pretty much are the people who are being paid to riot. I'm very suspicious of what's going on, particularly in the Ferguson situation. The New York situation is a little bit more complicated because the police were clearly over the line in that situation. But I suspect that there's a lot of promotion of the protests. We also see Bill Cosby being absolutely raked over the coals in what's going to be one of the ugliest hits I've ever seen. I'm assuming that the allegations are either not true or if there is a little bit of truth, and they're being way cooked up. And this guy is really being taken to the cleaners. My guess is if you look at the networks going after them, they're probably pretty similar to the ones that went after Gary Webb. But I think you're looking at a story or a series of stories, sort of the black beatdown, that is about two things. One is a desire for greater federal control of police. So this is about the militarization of the local police and getting control of them, which is a very scary thing. That's the last thing you want, is the feds controlling your local police. The other thing is, I think they're covering up the immigration story and trying to distract from it. We have 17 states, with Texas in the lead, suing the Obama administration on immigration. That's going to be a big one. We saw NASA this week delay their Orion mission. Maybe it'll take off tomorrow. We'll see. And that's a test flight for flights that hopefully, if they are successful, will take human crews to Mars. Bank deposit insurance. We have bank issues both in China and the U.S. China has just started to float their proposal on deposit insurance. Very interesting pros and cons. I'll have a story that'll be up tomorrow about it. China's offering 81,000, essentially U.S. equivalent, and that's going to put them ahead of both Hong Kong and Singapore in terms of what those areas offer. So it'll be good for the banks who use it. There's also a lot of rural cooperative banks and others who won't have the benefit of it. And the question is, what will it do to those? In the U.S., we had a highly muddled, irresponsible article by Ellen Brown, who sometimes can put out some good pieces, but on banking, I find we disagree pretty clearly. And it started off my week with about 5 subscribers or clients emailing, wanting to know if they should take all their money out of the bank. I said, absolutely not. Don't be ridiculous. But the issue, one of the issues was FDIC insurance trustworthy or not? The only reason that I think the U.S. Treasury and the Congress would let FDIC go down is if Mr. Global really wanted to take it down. I don't see any indication of that whatsoever. So if you're under the FDIC limit of $250,000 in a bank, as a practical matter, I wouldn't worry. I mean, one of the advantages, if we lose reserve currency status, we have to worry. But as long as we have reserve currency status, remember, they can print as many dollars as they want. So we have to worry about debasement, but we really don't have to worry that they don't have the power to print dollars. The issue that Brown points out, which is a legitimate issue, is derivatives have now been given first priority over deposits. There's great complaint in the folks, who are very opposed to the bailout, saying, well, it's very wrong to take the money out of deposits. Well, if banks go down, that's what you're going to do. Uninsured deposits are absolutely going to go down. And yes, they are going to be treated as creditors. And that's the way the world worked. And it's the way the world worked for centuries before bailouts came along. So I kind of feel like saying, you know, if you put your money in an institution that goes down, well, that's, you know, that's how it works. I personally don't bank in a bank that engages in derivatives, and I would do everything I could to avoid banking in a bank that engages in derivatives. I don't keep more than $250,000 in, and rarely have, except, you know, just when transitioning money from one place to another. I'm not worried about, again, the FDIC system, but I do want to be in a bank that I think could make it if the FDIC system went down, and I think my bank has a good chance of doing that. But so I want some real fundamental soundness, and I want excellence in leadership. So it matters the quality of the fundamental economics at your bank and the quality of the leadership. Good God. You know, that's the way it used to be before we thought the government would take care of everything. So the nanny state is not going to protect us. So we're going to have to go back to old-timey thinking. So the quality of the financial institutions you do business with matters tremendously, and you need to make sure you're doing business with people that, that you think have real fundamental economics and good sense behind them. There's a commentary up, or I put an article by on the false East-West paradigm. Very good. He posits scenarios that has the dollar going to very little or nothing. And I just put up a note saying, look, you need to contemplate this kind of scenario with the dollar going very high. We're having a breakout of adult fairy tales. One positing dollars in values, U.S. dollar index at as high as 165, and others positing the U.S. dollar at zero. And as far as I'm concerned, they're all extreme. What we're watching is a pendulum that goes back and forth and back and forth and allows, you know, it's all part of creating the rebalancing of the global economy, but it doesn't in a way that the leadership can most harvest everyone and sort of trade in and out, in and out, in and out. Watch out, the Wall Street Journal drumbeat on the editorial page on vaccines continues today with an absurd editorial saying parents who don't get their kids' vaccine are putting it all at risk. It's ridiculous, horrible, but, you know, it is a red flag that says to me, watch out, watch out, watch out. Another commentary we had up is Team Awesome Solari Circle. That's the little Solari Circle we're doing with our own team right now. We're in the middle of simulating $1 million portfolio at Yahoo Finance. But as we're working through our little investment issues, we're sort of sharing our agenda and some links with everyone. We do it every 2 weeks, and so we keep posting that, and you can check that out on the blog. Couple of stories worth watching in the markets. Global bond yields continue to decline. It's like a limbo dance. How low can you go? More and more cash on the sidelines. The bond funds now, their allocations are moving up to 6%. It's very hard to match the index when you have that much money uninvested. And one of the reasons that index funds are reported to do well is they're fully invested, where a lot of the active managers, both equities and cash, see merit to having cash in this environment, and I truly understand. Interesting, Uber, in the process of re-engineering the global taxi market, has now gotten financing. Private sources, it's not a public deal. Their valuation, $41 billion. Amazing. Let's just quick look at the markets. TLT, the 20-year Treasury ETF, now up 18%, S&P up 14%. Who would have thought that the 20-year Treasury would outperform the equity markets? Unbelievable. The corporate aggregate bond, AGG, the ETF, up 3% for the year. EEM, emerging markets and gold, down 2% now for the year. Oil down 30%. That's quite a swan dive from where it was in the summer. So if you look at a chart of futures, it's amazing the spread. Coffee up 70%, crude oil down 30%. So the commodities are quite stretched out in either direction. One of the questions I got that I wanted to answer during Money and Markets was a good one. Let me read it to you. I would like to ask Catherine if she could recommend 3 or 4 websites for information concerning stocks. I've been mostly in cash for the last 2 years. In 2008, it took charge of my portfolio and found a newsletter recommending commodities. I did quite well. Now I have time and the market has changed. I need more information and make better choices. Okay, let me describe what I read now. As an investment advisor, I'm probably going to spend more time than you. I think it's very, very important to understand primary trends. I spend a lot of time trying to do that, and that's why I've organized this Leary report both with the wrap-ups and the equity overviews to really help me distill down the noise and the news and look hard at the numbers and sort of define and see what the primary trends are. So you absolutely want to sort of stay tuned into the wrap-ups and watch them for ideas and opportunities in the equity overviews too. To help me with primary trends, I listen to Don Cox, who's been on the Salieri Report before. Wonderful, very experienced investment advisor and investor, and Kiplinger as well. One of the problems I have with a lot of financial commentary is most of them don't understand the black budget and haven't really gotten deeply into sort of the national security state and what it's all about and how it works. And because of that, they just have very false and very misleading frameworks. And they're unbelievably confident. You know, they stick with the official reality. They're unbelievably confident and very convincing, except they're dead wrong. And their map is so incomplete, it's frightening. So so they're not a whole lot of people that really add. And a lot of the ones you hear on the Salieri Report. People like Jim Norman and Dr. Joseph Farrell have been very helpful to me. Individual stock ideas, believe it or not, my favorite source is Forbes. Forbes does a really good job of covering new and interesting young companies. A lot of interesting ideas from a global market at Seeking Alpha, which is a website that I will occasionally use. And again, Kiplinger will come up with some interesting ideas as well, although they're much more U.S.-centric. The thing that helps me the most is traveling. So I drive around a lot, and you have a much different sense of Starbucks as an investment if you've been in 100 Starbucks all around the world. And so I really make it my business wherever I go, whether it's driving around the United States or traveling around the world, to really try and understand how different operations work and what it says about the quality of the management and the leadership, which is something I pay a lot of attention to. For market data, I sort of live on Yahoo Finance as my base site, but I use stock charts for doing charts. I find it's important to do your own charts. Occasionally for a foreign stock, I'll have to go to Bloomberg. If I was willing to spend the money, which I'm not, I would probably have a Bloomberg terminal the way I did at Hamilton Securities. I watch the U.S. dollar index at Market Watch. I also use business intelligence a lot for primary trends. I'll jump that back. And then I use silver and gold or money to watch gold and silver, and then Kitco for historical data. I hang out at FinViz. It's FINViz.com it's called Financial Visualization. And it's got great sort of ways of looking at financial data and tracking the markets. And because I'm an investment advisor and have to sort of dig into mutual funds, I subscribe to Morningstar. I just find their site interesting to look at. For technical analysis, I think you don't need to understand the black budget to do great technical analysis. You just have to do technical analysis. You can respond entirely to price. My favorite source for technical analysis is Rambus Chartology. Just great charts, great insight. You know, Rambus has an incredible gift, I think. So I'm a subscriber there. The challenge with technical analysis, I think the way to approach investment is with both technical analysis and sort of aligning with the primary trend. I think technical analysis can get you just chasing price, and you can make some bad mistakes. And so if you have a clear picture of the primary trend and you try and stay in alignment with it, but then use technical analysis for entry and exit, I think that's the way to go. It's important to understand that in the last depends on when you want to look at the statistics, but generally most active managers do not outperform index funds in a period like this. So you want to keep that in mind and sort of take a look at who's outperforming the index funds and why is always a good thing to do. So I hope that's helpful.